Hey everybody, this is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I am stuffed.
Good. I am also pleased to announce we have a special person, special guest with us today. We have Allie Gertz of Cosby Sweater fame and recently launched Fire Talk with Me Twin Peaks podcast.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me, guys.
I'm very excited. It's our first guest.
Oh, yay. That's great. Yeah, I've been hoping that there would be a Simpsons podcast forever and was going to take it upon myself, but then was super excited that you guys popped up in the new and noteworthy and just on the top podcast list, and was super excited because it was also just a good podcast.
I appreciate that. No one was more surprised about that than us.
That's great.
To be fair, I was not very surprised because Robbie does all the editing and he's great at it.
Aww. Oh, how sweet. That's so nice.
That's nice. My co-host and I are very good friends, but we don't have the same adoration that it sounds like you guys have for each other. So that's very sweet.
Make no mistake about it. If you're in the same room, it's full on hate.
That's true. I have had several bones broken by Robbie.
Before we start with this week's episode, Allie, could you talk a little bit about your relationship with The Simpsons?
Yeah, definitely. So I do music comedy, and one of the songs that I probably perform the most and love the most is called Everything's Coming Up Milhouse. And as you might guess, it is about Milhouse. It is a very sweet and tender song about a underdog who's kind of just a big loser. And the song is a little biting, and because things aren't coming up Milhouse, it's very clear throughout the show and through the song. Just like, yeah, Milhouse kind of gets a tough break, and I've always loved that character. And so I thought the best way to show that was to write a little song about it. And I've since written a few other songs. I have a very short one about Frank Grimes, Grimey, as he likes to be called.
I love Grimey.
Ooh, well, I mean, Homer does. But it's, you know, it's great. It's a very short song. And I have two that I'm working on. One called The Ballad of Jimbo Jones. And the premise of that one is the great joke, My Shirt's Chafing Me, Mind If I Take It Off? and then another one for Hans Moleman. So needless to say, I'm a very big fan. I've also been on a podcast called Obsessed, where people talk about obsessions. That's hosted by Joseph Scrimshaw. And my obsession was The Simpsons. So I'm in good company, I feel like.
Absolutely. This week we are doing episode 7G11, which was the ninth episode of season one, Life on the Fast Lane. It was written by John Swartzwelder, again, the most prolific Simpsons writer, directed by David Silverman. Originally aired March 18th, 1990.
So I was not alive.
You were not alive.
Wow. Oh, God, I'm old.
Yeah, Twin Peaks and the season of The Simpsons were the year before I was born.
You know how to make us feel old, Allie. We're not that old. This was originally episode was originally supposed to be titled Bjorn to be Wild, which I learned listening to the commentary. Apparently because the Jacques, Albert Brooks, was supposedly was going to be Swedish. Was being called Bjorn. But then he said, French is funnier. So they just went, okay, Albert Brooks knows that things are funny. we'll do that.
I don't know. A sexy Swede would go a lot longer than a Frenchman in my book.
I think the French accent also goes with his like kind of sleazy. It makes you even feel sleazier than that.
Are you trying to tell me you wouldn't fall in love with a Swedish chef? Come on now, Robbie.
The only thing I have to say about that is bork, bork, bork. The episode begins with Bart and Lisa making Marge breakfast. It turns out it's her birthday. They go up and present her with this giant stack of pancakes. And surprise, surprise, Homer has forgotten. He tries to cover it and runs to the mall. And gets her a bowling ball. Comes home and is whistling. At the same time, Marge is talking to his sisters about all the terrible gifts he's gotten her over the years. And she's kind of trying to defend him as best she can. They end up going to dinner at the Singing Sirloin, which is a restaurant that has singing waiters.
I love that on the sign it says home of the ballad and salads.
The
Colby's
ballads
been
themselves.
So good at those kinds of sign jokes.
Yeah, it's the sign jokes are. I think they haven't. They've really come into their own in the DVD and post DVD age, because now we can all freeze frame and read them. We don't have to resort on, you know, massive trivia books and stuff to actually catch them.
Right, it's just on Reddit now.
Yeah, it's true. I just saw a post on Reddit about the gambling odds for who shot Mr. Burns.
Wow.
And Maggie was 70-1.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's actually better odds than I would have given it, because honestly, Maggie came out of nowhere.
She was not actually the worst. It was, I think, Otto was 100-1. but we pan across all these different tables. Some people are sad and some people are happy, and all the there's a lot of waiters at this restaurant. There's like 20 waiters at this restaurant because they're all singing in groups of four. But they present they give all their presents to Marge. Bart gets her a jug of fancy perfume, quote unquote fancy.
And it's French, so I feel like had they gone with the Swedish option, they might have done maybe more of a Swedish gift.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
That's true. Swedish perfume is all the rage these days.
Lisa has given her a macaroni card, which was shown earlier in the episode. A very impressive macaroni card. It's Lisa, so she's the artist. Homer finally, at the end, presents the bowling ball, which crushes through the bottom of the box. He's packaged it in and destroys the cake. And obviously Marge is not happy about this, because it's fairly clear that he did not get this for her. He got this for himself. The fingers are drilled to his size. His name is on it. And it's odd to me that he is whistling when he comes home with the ball, with the present. It's hard for me to say. It seems like they have this conversation in bed about, and Marge is quite rightfully upset that he's gotten her this present. Homer's trying to cover up, like, no, I really thought maybe you'd like it, and I couldn't drill the fingers for your fingers because you weren't there, and blah, blah, blah. But makes him look more guilty in that conversation. But when he comes up, he's whistling, like, hey, I got a good present. This is a good present for Marge.
Well, the thing is, obviously, with his past presents, such as the Connie Chung calendar, which mystifies me to this day, it's obvious that he's gotten away with this a lot. So I think he's like, all right, you know, she wasn't super mad, and I get a bowling ball out of this.
Exactly. Yeah, he gets to go, you know, scotch-free, and he gets to keep his wife and also has a new gift for himself.
That's true. And Marge turns the tables on him by saying, I'm going to go bowling with my bowling ball.
Good for her. I really like that. And I wanted to say, this is the first time rewatching it that I noticed that, I mean, 34, like, that's the first time that it really hit me how young Marge is. And, like, you know, she would have been 24 when she had Bart, or, like, 25. That's crazy to me. My friends.
Yeah, I know.
You know, all my friends are that age. They don't have Bart and Lisa-aged kids. That's crazy.
They actually commented on that in the commentary. They're like, right when she said it, like, wow, Marge is 34. I think, and one of the writers had said it was depressing to him, but he realized he was now older than Homer.
Yeah.
And they kind of mentioned that the sliding time scale, where now that Marge is still 34, 25 years later.
At this rate, we'll be older than Marge in not long.
I know.
Patty and Selma even make a reference to her age, saying it's like 34, you know, you're young enough that you could start a new relationship with someone who doesn't, you know, make such a mess and remembers your birthday.
I know. It's pretty awful of Homer. This is a terrible thing. First forgetting and then buying her something for yourself, just unashamedly. And I think that goes a long way in justifying her actions in this. You actually are, you empathize with her when she goes off and, you know, kind of has this, you know, flirtatious relationship with this bowling instructor.
Absolutely.
And that's, we show, they go to Barney's Bowlerama, which is the first appearance apparently. And I understand that Eric Stefani, brother of Gwen Stefani, was the one who actually designed the look of Barney's Bowlerama.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that he worked on the show. I did not know he contributed that specifically.
He did a great job, because that looks like every sleazy bowling alley I've ever been in.
I was thinking, like, as I was watching, like, the little neon lights showing the ball hitting the pins. It's really colorful, but does portray that kind of little bit of sleaze factor, the neon lights. I think that does it. Marge goes bowling, doesn't know anything about it, obviously, manages to hit one pin by her, like, hurling the ball down the lane. She manages to meet the aforementioned Jacques, who is voiced amazingly by Albert Brooks.
Amazingly. Just so good.
Yeah, apparently he improvised everything.
Yeah, that was the same when he did, You Only Move Twice. Same thing with that.
Yeah, Hank Scorpio.
Yeah, really quickly, I loved learning Marge's shoe size in this episode, which is quite large. It's 13 double A.
Yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing is her feet are really long, but double A is extremely narrow. So she has really long, but really narrow feet.
Cartoonish, some people might say.
It's crazy. This Jacques figure is shown winning a bet from some sucker. I guess he's like a shark of the bowling alley. He has a glove. You know, he knows what he's doing.
And
there's
groupies.
I was about to say, there's a couple like bowling alley ladies who are kind of fawning over him. It's kind of beginning this implication that he's kind of this sleazy dude. He goes over to Marge, is immediately flirtatious with her. Asks her about why her ball it has Homer on it, and she's, oh, that's my ball's name.
Yeah, so, I mean, she's already taken by Jacques because, you know, the proper response would have been like, Homer's my husband's name. She very quickly is not willing to reveal that so soon.
No, she's she's fresh kind of off the hurt of Homer, being mean, being hurtful towards her, and this gentleman is, I think they really emphasize the fact that she's very naive.
Oh, yeah.
About all this stuff, and she's taken aback by this guy who, does a lot of things that add up to, like, being kind of a pickup artist of the bowling alley.
That's true. And, he likes to touch her, obviously. He plays with her hands, and he basically picks her up and moves her, so he's very big on the physical contact to begin with.
Definitely.
Yeah. I do really enjoy one of the quote after he learns that the ball's name is Homer. He has this quote about her attachment to heavy, clumsy things, and we actually have that clip. So we'll post that now.
Many people have senseless attachments to heavy, clumsy things, such as this Homer of yours.
He is hitting on Marge and basically offers her lessons for the low, low price of $25.
A $40 value.
Yeah.
And I think she is kind of still blown over, kind of speechless almost, and accepts.
She also wants to prove a point. She has decided that she's going to utilize this horrible, selfish gift from Homer and, wants to kind of shove it in his face and teach him a lesson, too.
Yeah, that's true. And she can't really, if she only goes once, it kind of proves his point almost.
Right.
So she's like, well, if I learn how to bowl and I bowl well, that's even better.
Sure.
This episode would have been even better if it had come down to some sort of final showdown between Homer and Marge. Who's the better bowler? And Marge crushing him utterly. But that would have been a different episode.
That would have been Lisa on Ice type of
I was
rival.
About to say, I was thinking, that reminds me of Lisa on Ice. At the same time, Homer is at home with the kids. We really don't have seen this yet in the show. Like, as a actual parent, he gets them pizza. And there's a nice little sequence of them throwing the pizza box away as a team, where the camera manages to show them handing the box to each other like three times in a row without them re-entering the shot. Yeah,
such
it's a really
silly visual humor.
Yeah, it's very clever, really well done for especially the first season, which is sometimes rough with animation occasionally. This is even they even know down in the commentary that this is kind of a more prototype for the second season. They sing a little lullaby for Maggie, like it's actually they're a happy family. It's kind of strange. You haven't really seen it so far in the show, where they're all peaceful and they get along. Marge comes home late. Homer's sound asleep. She wakes him up and tells him that she's going back, and he's kind of a little taken aback by this. He clearly expected her to give up after one time. He even kind of chides her for calling it a hobby instead of a sport.
Right.
She comes back the next day, and it's full-on jock charm flirtatious mode. He has gotten her a glove that says Marge on it.
Yeah, and obviously, that's just so great because, of course, you know, you have that up against the bowling ball. It's her name, and she says, it's like, it's really for me. And yeah. It's exactly what, you know, con artist or not, whatever it is, a pickup artist, you know, he is satisfying Marge in a way that she hasn't been satisfied before, which is just like genuine attention to her wants and needs, which is so nice. And, you know, you would hope that she was getting it from her husband.
It's true. It's and there's a reason she's likes being around this guy is because he pays attention to her. The thing that makes me question it, like the first time I was watching this, you know, he gives her this paint, but then he gives her the price of the glove. It's $17.50. I think that's what the price was. And I'm like, that's a little telling people how much a present cost.
Well, to be fair, you know, obviously he can't just say, oh, it's for you. That would be too obvious. But he gives her a discount on it. Then, well, he's just a bowling instructor.
Right. I don't think he would. And they dedicate a little bit of time with him showing, like, they are, like, analyzing the lanes. Like, their faces are literally on the ground. Kind of this sleep, like, this jazz music, like, saxophone-heavy music playing this whole time, whenever Jacques's on screen. And it really is, it makes this whole scene very sensual. It makes you feel like you feel this relationship between them.
Yeah, I mean, it very clearly just feels like an affair. There's something sleazy about it, at least on one end.
Yeah. There is a moment here when he asks her if she's hungry and he yells out, 4 onion rings, and there's no accent. That's the thing that they bring up online a lot and in the commentary. And I'm wondering if that was intentional on Albert Brooks' part to make it like seem like this whole accent is a put on, or is it just a slip up momentarily? The fact that they use it makes me think that, you know, it's supposed to be that he has a put upon accent.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really great read into it. Those kinds of things would have been very easy to cut out or redo. It doesn't seem like lazy editing on the part of the Simpsons creators.
No, they want to try and enhance the fact that he's, you know, maybe not what he seems. Maybe not. He's more than just the charming guy. He actually drives her home and they have this like little intimate conversation in his car with a giant moon in the background that looks like a bowling ball.
Right.
Really looks really great. And he wants to meet her outside of the bowling alley. He wants to take her out for brunch.
Which is one of my favorite segments ever. Like that, like when I watched this episode for the first time, which would have been in syndication for me. But when I watched it for the first time, that was always the brunch description was always the part that stuck with me over the years. And it's such a great little thing that he comes up with, you know, how it's not quite breakfast. It's not quite lunch, but it comes with a slice of cantaloupe. And you don't completely get what you would have gotten at breakfast, but it's a good meal. So yeah. Funny.
And the fact that she doesn't know what brunch is. That's it further plays into that the little naivety of Marge. Yeah. And we actually have that quote, so we'll play it right now.
What's brunch?
You'd love it. It's not quite breakfast. It's not quite lunch, but it comes with a slice of cantaloupe at the end. You don't get completely what you would at breakfast, but you get a good meal.
I don't think so.
That is an excellent quote. and the fact that apparently Albert Brooks went through multiple iterations of him trying to define brunch.
I think they settled on the best one. Although, yeah, I think, to be fair, that is obviously from the 1990s, because I don't know if you've been to brunch lately, but it's definitely plenty of food.
Oh, yeah, brunch has changed. Probably because of The Simpsons.
That's true.
I wouldn't put it past it. I mean, I think that was what brunch was at that time. She agrees to meet him for brunch and goes inside. And this time, Homer's awake when she comes home. he's waiting up for her. And she comes home and he wants to say something. He says, Marge, and she's like, yeah. And he's like, never mind.
So sad.
It is. It's the first time we see Homer kind of impacted. Cause I don't think Homer's ever felt like had this happen between him and Marge before. Like, they don't, this thing where she's giving attention, she's always the most attentive to him and the family's needs. Like, she's always there for them. And now that, you know, she's going off and pursuing something, you know, her own interest, he's not really used to that. We haven't seen that yet in the show.
I think that Homer is such a genuinely good person and also a great husband he wants to be a good everything. I just think that he hasn't really been given that room because Marge is so good at doing everything for them. And it's kind of stunted his growth, just like with the pizza. You know, like, it wasn't like he was, like, choosing not to cook. It's that he doesn't know how to. And it's all of these different things. Like, he would love to say something there, I feel like. But as we talk about later with Bart and Homer, like, he might say something foolish. So it's so sad to see that he desperately wants to communicate but doesn't know how.
They cut back to Marge at brunch with Jacques, and they're at a place called Shorty's. Apparently there was a joke that they didn't do with a little tiny chef.
Oh, gosh.
A little top hat, a little chef's hat will be bobbing up and down in the background somewhere because, you know, they have a short chef because they're Shorty's. They have this brief discussion, and then he wants to meet her alone in, you know, a hotel or probably his apartment.
His apartment. Right?
He mentions, Fiesta Terrace, I believe it's called, another one of those, I think that was before, what's the name of those apartments that Milhouse's dad moved into?
Oh, yeah, I forget the name. It's so funny, though.
It's bothering me. I can't remember. Then Helen Lovejoy shows up, which is her first appearance. Revan Lovejoy was just introduced in the previous episode, and now we see his kind of the gossipy wife, which is it's a really nice pair for the Reverend to have a wife that is she's gossipy and kind of they animate her almost like bird-like, like she's a hummingbird. She's flitting around, and Jacques tries to, you know, do some kind of bowling demonstration on the table to try and dismiss her so she doesn't catch wind of what's happening.
Which is kind of odd because that table has way, way more salt and pepper shakers than any normal table should.
Helen Lovejoy scampers off, and Marge, before she can answer his question, faints, which they segue into this amazing dream sequence. It's from what I've read online, I had not know this, but it's a movie from the 30s called The Gay Divorcee.
Huh. Interesting.
Which apparently has it had a Fred Astaire.
Oh.
So apparently it had kind of this elegant dance number. It's the coloring is different in it. It's all like kind of dull tones mixed with pinks and blues.
Yeah, so nice.
It reminded me of actually the similar kind of dream sequence from Big Lebowski, where there's a lot of bowling kind of imagery, kind of fooling in and stuff like that.
And we can't forget his trophies for lovemaking.
Yes, there's many. Those are not for bowling.
And I think, doesn't he actually literally say that she's naive there? It's like, oh, Marge, you're so naive. Like, those aren't for bowling, it's for lovemaking.
Yep, he sure does.
Yeah, they do so many fun, like, the way that they approach, like, such, like, hard-hitting ideas like that is so good. Just like with, Lovejoy lady, like, she's just like, I'm the nosy, gossipy neighbor, like, or the, you know, wife of the whatever. And it's just, like, so on the head, but in a perfect, jokey way that I love.
Yeah, it really works really well. As he's about to kiss her, she wakes up and agrees to meet him on Thursday. She goes home. Homer at the same time, Homer is finding her glove that now says for Marge. I don't know if it said for Marge in the first time we saw it. It did say Marge for sure. I think they just added that in at the end just to give him something that's
right
to show that someone else got it for her. But he just, he, like, looks at it, he's sad, and then he puts it back in the drawer and closes it. And at, by this time, both Bart and Lisa have, Lisa especially, Lisa lets Bart in on it, after Marge kind of gives them very special lunches with a whole bunch of stuff in it. There's a comic book for Bart, there's, like, a stuffed animal for Lisa. And Lisa's like, there's something wrong. Something wrong between mom and dad.
Yeah, overcompensation, dealing with guilt.
Yeah, and Bart is comes to Homer and says, we should go play catch. And Homer is, like, clearly wrecked. He, like, I don't even know if I can move.
Yeah, I love that line. He says, I don't know if I could lift my head, let alone, you know, my hand to play catch. Like, it's just so sweet. Like, it's so, he's so sad and tender. And we, I mean, personally, really just feel so bad. And I get that position he's in.
Yeah, and he goes outside to play catch, and this is reminiscent of Bart the Genius with Homer and Bart playing catch. But this time, Homer's the one who's upset, and Bart wings him right in the head with the baseball because he's not paying attention at all.
And Homer doesn't even react. He's just like, oh, ball hit me in the head. Oh, well.
And he fall and falls over. Bart understands that something's wrong, and he says, you once gave me good advice, Dad, and I think you should. You, and he's like, me? Give you advice? You sure?
Get out of here.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah. When, and he basically says, when you don't know what to do, just keep your full mouth shut.
Which in general is good advice for life, but not particularly in this situation.
No. And so we cut to the next morning, and Homer, she's making him lunch, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And he kind of walks up behind her, forlorn, clearly upset. And he, you can see him pondering, what should I do? And he has this advice that he's himself told Bart before, and he's up until this point followed. And he says something. He compliments Marge on her sandwich's ability, her sandwich making ability.
Well, it's funny because you can see the gears turning in his head. He's like, I have to say something. He's trying to show some emotional maturity, but the best he can come up with is, your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are the best. The jelly stays right in the middle where it's supposed to, so your fingers don't get sticky. Which, honestly, is a great compliment because that's hard to do. But, unfortunately, that's all he can come up with at that moment. It's very sad, but you can tell that Marge knows it.
I gotta say, I rewatched this episode right before doing the show, and I cried. It's such a sweet, and you know, I didn't cry as a kid, but like, it, there's so much there, and so few people have the gift of being eloquent, and you know, you take what you get, which is, I think, Marge's MO in that relationship. And like, that for Homer is a really touching sentiment.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that it's such an, like, innocent compliment. He doesn't compliment how she looks. He doesn't compliment, you know, something like that. He just says, you make really good sandwiches. And it kind of is a counterpart to her innocence. It's a very kind of, this is all I know. Like, I know that you make amazing sandwiches. And I think it really shows kind of their closeness in that Jacques doesn't know she makes amazing sandwiches. All he knows about her is that, you know, he likes how she looks and he likes her kind of naivety.
Also, this is probably the first point in the episode where he compliments her. Like, this is the first time he says, you know, Marge, I like something you do. And you get the feeling that that's not something that happens in the house that much.
Yeah, and then what I like is how he closes that, which is, you know, I believe that we shouldn't hide our feelings. I feel like if I have something to say, I should tell you, which is the exact opposite advice that he was just given by Bart, and something that we have not seen at all until this moment. And I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, it's him going against his own wisdom, so to speak. And I will see it works out. We cut to him at the power plant, and this is this further adds to that is that he's sitting next to Lenny. This is the first appearance of Lenny. Unfortunately, no Carl yet. But he's not eating his sandwich. He's just staring at it. And they ask him if he's hungry. And he says, oh, I'm starving. But this might be the last thing she ever gives to me. This is the last part of her that I have. How could I eat it? That's really, really touching in a very, like, his childlike way that he is, you know, it's almost, it's already established that Homer loves food, and the fact that he can't eat this because Marge made it for him is it shows you even further that this is he's racked with sorrow about this. We cut to Marge driving to Jacques' apartment. And Matt is clued in to me that it was Bachelor Arms is the name of the apartment complex of Milhouse's father.
Oh, that's right.
And she's driving, and on the way, this is a thing they've done. They do a few times in the series. She's passing couples in different iterations of their relationship. Like first, it's a young couple, and then a couple getting married, and then a couple with a baby, an old couple, and then a couple skeletons
That's
hanging.
That's my favorite one. So
the skeletons in the Halloween store, or whatever the costume store, and she comes to a sign. One way is to Jacques, and one way is to the power plant to Homer. And you know, she goes one way, then the other, then the other, then back and forth, and finally we see her make the choice to go to the power plant. And the show ends with her coming in. It's a kind of a parody slash homage to Officer and a Gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
The background music is playing, and she walks in, and you can see the relief wash over him. He's this set, like, doing something I don't think they actually do in Radioactive in nuclear power plants, but like sorting through material with gloves, but she shows up and he just like the animation is gorgeous, and it really sells.
Oh yeah, definitely
sells him. Just suddenly he just his heart grows back into full size, almost like you see the color come back into him, and they embrace and kiss, and he picks her up, and they walk out and end on an amazing quote. This is for the end of the episode, which we have right here. I can't do justice, so I won't. Here it is.
Hey, what'll I tell the boss?
Tell him I'm going to the back seat of my car with a woman I love, and I won't be back for 10 minutes.
I do want to mention before we kind of do an overall look back is that when Jacques, they do show Jacques briefly kind of prepping himself for Marge coming over. He has a French accent, and he's by himself.
Right.
I'm really wondering about that, because, you know, earlier they kind of hinted that maybe it's not real.
Well,
but
he's talking to himself. He's psyching himself up, you know, the perfect moments, not the deed, not the memory, but the anticipation. And if you don't say anticipation in a French accent, get the hell out. You're not worth it.
Yeah, I'm just curious about if he's just practicing, or if he even just keeps it up all the time, or if it really is a French accent. Is he in shock? I don't know. It's a mystery for the ages.
Not to mention, no American man had that many products in his bathroom in the early 90s. Now, when metrosexuals came along about a decade ago, then yes, but no straight man would have that many products in his bathroom in the early 90s.
That's true. I mean, I don't know, he's a playboy. Maybe he does. I think back to like Patrick Bateman in American Psycho. That was the 80s. That's true. A rich guy. He took care of himself.
Yeah, I love the last shot so much. And often just for fun, you know, I just will look up stills from the show just on Google or Tumblr just to have in my phone to look at, just because I love The Simpsons and I love to look at certain things. And each episode that has Marge and Homer just always, you know, is so heartwarming, and it really shows you how honest and real and lifelike their relationship is, because not too many shows really show how difficult it is to be in a monogamous, happy relationship. And as you guys will eventually reach throughout the show, there are many times that Homer, you know, will be with someone that he might be attracted to. And, you know, I think it's really good that we see Marge do that first, and it was just really beautiful, I think, that they do end up overcoming it. And it's something that's really great. And I know that a lot of kids growing up that I knew were not allowed to watch the show because it apparently did not promote good family values. But stuff like this just really, really brings home just the importance of that kind of communication and love and all these great, like, lessons. And it's always such a sweet episode to me.
Oh, absolutely. They're, you know, them basically walking off into the sunset. It's really touching.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And there are a few walking off into the sunset episodes that are just so good for The Simpsons. It's always a sweet thing that they do.
And they kind of mentioned this in one of the DVD commentaries, is that this is a story that a live action sitcom couldn't really do. Like, it's too serious for an actual sitcom. And certainly no animated show up to this point had really done anything like this, of showing a married couple kind of, you know, struggling with staying monogamous with, you know, having an affair or something like that. And it's The Simpsons were really the first to kind of actually do it and maintain kind of humor and kind of a lighthearted tone while broaching a subject that's generally only really done in dramas or soap operas up to that point.
Yeah, I think The Simpsons at their best is always when they hit those heartstrings, and it always pays off in the end.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting that this is the first time we actually hear Marge laugh for real, and it's actually Julie Cadner's actual laugh. Like, that's, wow. And it's the first time that you actually, and they, I think they go back to it because she's actually laughing at Albert Brooks, one of his improvs. Like, she, like, it's genuine laughter. And they go, like, well, we should use that more often. It's really unique to her character.
I love that. I did not know that. That's so sweet. And I adore Julie Cavanagh. What a great actress and voice actress.
Yeah, I think as we're going through this first season, we're finally seeing, this is the first real Marge-centered episode. She kind of, up to this point, is just kind of this doting mother figure.
She's
this
mom.
Gives her,
yeah.
This gives her a lot of depth and shows kind of what they'll continue to explore as the series goes on.
Yeah, that'll be great. I'm excited. I'm excited for people through this podcast to really realize how amazing Lisa and Marge are, because I do feel like it's so Bart and Homer centric for first time watchers and for kids especially, just because that's where so much of the humor comes from. But as we saw in this episode, and you will throughout the podcast, there are so many great levels to both of those characters. And it's really fun as you get older to really appreciate the subtleties and nuances of this show.
Absolutely. Homer and Bart are the easy targets for, like, the humor, because they can do the dumb things most of the time, like the slapstick jokes and stuff like that. And Marge and Lisa they're smarter, they're more like emotionally centered. But without that emotional center, a lot of the stuff doesn't mean as much.
Oh, like, yeah, it becomes a different show without them.
Exactly.
It becomes shows that are on air now that aren't very good. That's maybe you're doing a crossover with them.
I was going to say, are we going to refer? Yes.
We won't mention it.
Well, think Matt and I have already mentioned it multiple times in the podcast. So I don't. Yes, yeah, Family Guy. Hey guys, we're talking about Family Guy, which there is no. That's it's just hitting you in the face with jokes.
Oh yeah.
Pop culture references for 25 minutes, and then there's no real emotional core at all. Anything you guys want to touch on before we move on to our listener question?
Actually, I had one quick thing. I noticed that this is our first real Marge-centered episode, and not counting Maggie because she's a baby, that means in the first 9 episodes, every single major character has had at least one episode that focuses on them. And I know most sitcoms have, you know, 1 or 2 main characters and they focus on them. And then as the shows go on, they tend to focus more on the side characters or other main characters. But within the first 9 episodes, The Simpsons has already gotten every major character, and they'll just cycle through them from here on out. Yeah, I think it shows a lot of maturity of the writers of the show that they're able to do that with every single character and how well characterized they are.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's this show, like, a lot of people rag on the first season, it's very good. There's a few kind of rough episodes that they're trying to find their feet, but this is indistinguishable from a lot of later episodes. Like, they said this is kind of a prototype of the second season, but this is as good as anything in second or third season. I mean, it's a very solid episode.
I agree.
Yeah. With that, let's jump to our listener question of the week, which was, what was your favorite Bart episode and why? This is coming on the heels of our last week's Telltale Head there. God, I'm already forgetting things. God, we're already 9 episodes in. I'm already forgetting. So I got tons of great answers from you guys. You guys are knocking it out of the park. From Reddit, we have Mr. Schnurubs. His answer is Lemon of Troy. It was wacky and silly in a way that normally only Homer episodes are. And Also from Reddit, Tom Bad the Bad. For me, it has to be Bart Gets an F. It has the usual Bart-style humor, but with a real heartfelt ending that fleshes out his character and gives him more emotional depth rather than just being a bad kid. Okay. Which I think a lot of Bart episodes really kind of share that. The best Bart episodes are the ones where he kind of comes to terms with right and wrong. And
that's the first episode of season two, too. Like, that gets emotional fast.
It really does. On Twitter, we have Jean-Pierre, at JPX9003. Bart sells his soul in the Garden of Eden, Alf Pogs, Moe's Family Restaurant, and Bart swallowing his soul loose leaf. Tim, at Tim That Is Dumb, Marge, Be Not Proud. Another Bart, classic Bart atoning for his mistakes, plus Bone Storm and Thrillho. They didn't mention Thrillho in there, but I love Thrillho. And the superior Lee Carvalho's putting.
Oh, that's a great game, by the way. If you're ever get a chance to pick that up, you will be absolutely enraptured.
I think you're trying to pull my leg there, man.
Maybe.
Okay. On Facebook, we have Dan, the Itchy and Scratchy movie. No matter what other episodes' continuities dictate, as far as I'm concerned, Bart does grow up and become Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And I grew totally on board. Bart becomes Chief Justice. No debate. To top us off, we got an email. This is really lovely. I'm going to read the whole thing because it's so amazing. Hi, Diddly Ho Podcasterinos. you mentioned this episode last week, but Bart on the Road is definitely my favorite Bart episode. I am from Knoxville, and we fully embrace the episode here, despite the fact that we're the butt of the joke. They've actually hosted a wig contest at the Sun Sphere the last couple of years. My wife and I had our wedding reception at the Sun Sphere.
Oh my God, that's great.
Which actually has a really nice bar room. Our invitations, a Simpsons-style cartoon of the two of us in front of the Sun Sphere. We are nerds. Love the show, Bill from Knoxville. Yeah, that's just all these little anecdotes from all these Simpsons fans. That's amazing. I did not know that they have wig contests at the Sun Sphere. That's so cool.
That's so sweet. Congratulations to their marriage too. How fun!
Exactly. It's beautiful. The fandom unites them. Matt, what is your favorite Bart episode?
Well, there are a great many to pick from. And while Three Men in a Comic Book was a very close second, I have to go with Bart's Dog Gets an F. Mainly because, as someone who has adopted a dog who Robbie has met, who just, he was not quite all there. I understand loving I understand loving a dog who's not the brightest bulb. And his emotion in that episode is just crushing when you see how heartbroken he is that his dog is going to get taken away from him just for being dumb. That's really all there is to it.
I love that.
Allie, what's your favorite?
I want to make sure they get the title right just because it's so long. But I think it's Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song.
Okay, that's a good one.
That's the title?
That's a good one.
That one and Bart the Lover. I just love Bart interacting with teachers and principals in very human ways, but particularly the Seymour relationship is just so sweet and so strange, and I love everything about it, and it's such a funny episode through and through.
Totally. Mine is, I tip my hand with my answers from our social media, and it's Bart Sells His Soul. How many times I have said Alf's back in Pog form.
I know.
I can't even count. Like, Jean-Pierre had mentioned all the references from that episode, plus that really creepy dream sequence with all the kids in the rowboats with their souls.
That was terrifying.
I know, but it really sells, like, the genuine horror that he has about, like, he's empty.
Yeah, that episode and Lemon of Troy, which was mentioned earlier, are both prominently quoted in my Milhouse song that I have.
Yes, which I do want to say is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I bought your album. It's great. You guys should buy her album. It's amazing.
Thank you.
It really is.
Oh, guys.
What our listener question next week? I would say just favorite Marge episode. We're on the heels of a Marge episode. Let's go favorite Marge episode. Let's do the easy ones first, because as we go on, we're gonna have to get more and more intricate with these questions. So, favorite Marge episode and why? And we'll be posting all our social media. You can get us on Twitter. It's at Simpsons Show Pod. You can get us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. You can email us, SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. And finally, the last thing we do, the last segment of every show is called Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Where we rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically. Our number one episode right now is Bart the General. Number two, Moaning Lisa. And pulling up the rear is Homer's Odyssey. Now, Allie, this is a lot of trust we're putting in you. Because this is, you know, for all time, best episodes. Where do you guys think this one goes?
And this is just within what you've already seen, right?
Well, yes, yeah. This is just up through the first 9 episodes. You know, as we go, we're going to add them.
Oh, my goodness.
We picked Bart the General mainly because it was a very tight, you know, episode. It had a lot of thematic references to war movies. It was very incisive. Had a lot of, like, the stuff we think about, Simpsons humor, like, you know, it's critical of and smart.
Sure.
And Moaning Lisa is second because it's, you know, it's the kind of the emotional core, and there's a lot of really great writing in that one. It was a little bit of a toss-up. I would put this right behind them personally.
I would too. There's so much that goes on here, and like you said, this really does a lot to lead us into the second season when that does finally come around.
Matt, what do you think? You think that's okay? You think putting it at a new number 3?
New number 3 or new number 2?
New number 3, right below Moaning Lisa. You're gonna really?
Yeah, I think I can go with that. Mainly because of my love for Lisa. Quite frankly, any episode with her in it is prime on my list. So I think I can be comfortable with this one at number 3.
Okay, I think so. It's not a hill you're ready to die on, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, when we get to that point, we'll have to fight it out. But so that will put Life on the Fast Lane at number 3. A funny thing we haven't mentioned yet, actually, is that this episode won an Emmy.
Yes.
For Outstanding Series, which it actually was against the first episode, Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire. But
which, to be fair, this is a lot better than that.
Yeah, it really is. I think they just did that one because it was the first one. It was kind of a culture shock. Before we go, Allie, plug all your stuff.
All right. My name on Twitter is Cosby Sweater, C-O-S-S-B-Y Sweater. It's a fun little high fidelity reference. And you can buy my album on iTunes and listen to it on Spotify, RDO, anywhere that you could get music. My album's available. I have a podcast about Twin Peaks called Fire Talk With Me. And that sounds like about it. Oh, my website, you could find all of this, is alliegertz.com.
And I will be linking to all this stuff in all our social media as well. So you guys can, if you check all that, check us out, you will find all of it. Before we go, I want to say iTunes and Stitcher, if you like us, please leave good reviews. If you like us, please subscribe. It really helps us out. It really gets us more placement on iTunes and Stitcher and all these associated channels. You have no idea how much it means to us just to get one more good review. I think that will do it for the week. And with that, I am Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons. And to play us out is Allie, as Cosby Sweater, singing Everything's Coming Up Milhouse.
Everything's coming up Milhouse, but Lisa still passes him by. Everything's coming up Milhouse, but his flood pants can't keep his eyes dry. He gives Nelson Lisa's letter. He believes that when she leaves him, she'll like Milhouse better. He gets knocked to the floor. Isn't that what a big sister is for? Everything's coming up Milhouse, but nobody likes him at all. Everything's coming up Milhouse, but the friends that he's about your goldfish, even though you've got the bowl. You've got love you when you fall. In the treehouse, you're a loner. Lisa knows there's nothing funny about the word tromboner. She's bound to respect you soon. When she sees that you'll do anything she asks of you, you're so vacant, Millhouse. You could be old Gil's house. Unsatisfactory, as dry as your dad's crack factory. Life's given you lemons. You're squozing your supply. You know what it feels like when doves cry. Ooh.